coming right up in just a moment. We're going to have Jeff Krepke, and he is with Rebuild Coffee Park. Obviously, we all know that Coffee Park was basically destroyed on the fire, and basically the neighbors and everybody has to make it all happen. So Jeff is on the line right now. Jeff, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, great, Jeff. Welcome. Welcome back to KOWS. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you so much for having me again.
Oh, my pleasure. And well, from the certainly the newspaper reports and things, things aren't going swimmingly, shall we say, in the rebuilding of Coffee Park. It's been a lot of headlines of, well, some good, some bad, basically, it seems. Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say if they're going swimmingly or not because there's nothing to compare it to.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
This has never been seen before, never been done before. It's kind of funny when you talk to everybody from the first responders to the emergency services coordinators to insurance companies and everybody in between and the city and the politicians. And such, it's we're sort of a case study for all aspects of that. You know, other firefighters around the nation are learning from our firefighters. Other cities are learning from our city on how to respond. And it's just one of those things where nobody really knows how this is supposed to go because no one's ever seen it before, and we're all just trying to find our best way to move forward together.
Well, so that does make for a lot of fits and starts, I imagine, then in moving forward.
Yeah, it does. You know, just like anything else, whether it's, you know, learning a hobby or starting a profession, it's not unlike that. You have some leaps forward and then you have some delays or some steps backward. And we all just have to learn how to go forward. So we've had great success with the city planning they're having their planning department expedite the permitting process, but then there's steps backwards in terms of infrastructure or builders that thought they could build and had interest and then backing out because they couldn't make it financially successful or even feasible. So it's a learning process for everybody at all levels.
Well, that's it. And certainly you've got a vested interest in this, as you were one of the many people who lost their home in the fire in Coffee Park.
Yeah, I did lose my home, and I do have vested interest. And you know, I try to keep a positive attitude and an open mind going forward. People ask me how I can take on all this responsibility and be somebody that is trying to organize a neighborhood and take on this sort of a massive task. And, you know, my response is I can either stand and cry or move forward and smile. I choose not to dwell on the negative and do what I can. Not to say that the negative doesn't affect me. You know, there are times that just like anybody who went through this that, you know, when you're alone or you have time to think too much, it'll get to you a little bit emotionally, but you just try not to let it overwhelm you. You try not to let it control you and just move forward and try to do the best you can for yourself and your neighbors.
Right. And now, in your own situation, what is happening with your own house? Where are you sitting with that?
So debris has been cleared. We haven't had the property released back yet from FEMA. There's still soil testing, verification that needs to be done. But the debris is gone. And personally, my wife and I and our son we're in a rental now. We're out of our parents' house, my parents' house. Well, actually, I should say my parents' guest room. We didn't have room in the house.
Yeah.
We had a guest room.
Yeah.
We feel fortunate that we're able to find a house due to a friend that had an investment property that he had just recently purchased. So we're trying to, you know, just make the best of the situation and try to create our own home again.
Indeed. And of course, thousands of other people, that's being echoed in, isn't it?
Yeah, we aren't alone. We're better off than some. But, we're all just trying to find our own way. And that was the whole point of the Coffee Strong Neighborhood Association that we started is just for Coffee Park people by Coffee Park people. So just trying to help our neighbors get the information and the resources that they need to make a decision on what they want to do, whether whether it's the decision on which builder to use or a decision to rebuild at all. And, you know, we take great pride in the fact that we're doing this for ourselves and for our neighbors, so that we're not a law firm or any other sort of private entity that's trying that may be perceived as having an interest in what these residents rebuilding have. We're just neighbors trying to help neighbors.
Right, exactly. And well, and that's the thing. It's the emotional support side of this whole thing is big. If you want your neighborhood to survive, are people helping in that way, or just literally neighbors sitting with neighbors and having a cup of coffee and getting them over it?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things we're trying to tackle next as a neighborhood and as a neighborhood association with Coffee Strong is. We've been still focused on trying to get people back in their homes and getting their insurance issues settled, that we are starting to realize that the only time we really come together is to discuss the negative. Mm-hmm. And we really want to try to focus on reestablishing that neighborhood feel, that feeling that you have when, you know, you walk out to go to work and your neighbor walks out to go to work at the same time. You kind of wave at each other and say, you know, hey, how you doing, and move on. Really want to get that feeling back and have good times and positive feelings when we see each other, instead of how's your insurance settlement going? Are you rebuilding? What builder are you talking to? Those kind of conversations. You want something to be sort of an escape from those. And those kind of experiences are direly needed, because the one thing I think that people don't really realize is housing is a physical issue, right? We didn't have a house. Now we have a house, and that's fine. It's the emotional aspect of that, that was our home, and now we're forced into live in a place that we didn't choose to live in. It was what we had to settle for.
Right.
And that emotional concept, I always joke that when you move into a new house, there's like that month where it's not your home. When you move into a new house, when you buy a new house or in a new rental, and you still got to remember the way to drive home, and after a while, it's just second nature, and that's your home, and you feel it, and that's fine. Well,
right.
Where a lot of the residents are now, they're not going to have that because they didn't choose to live in the places they live. Hmm. So no matter how homey, no matter how personal you can make that house feel, it's not going to be the same because we didn't choose to be there. And so we're trying to help people over that fact, and that's one of the big things we want to accomplish next is help people with those emotions.
Yeah, that's your best. Exactly. The neighbors are best positioned to do that, aren't they? Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. No, there's so many levels of concern, isn't there? It's it's amazing that as a group you've taken that on. Without that, there'd be a lot more stress, I would imagine, in Coffee Park.
Yeah, and you know, my personal belief is if it wasn't for our organization, I don't know what kind of help the residents would get, because we're all going through it at the same time. And so it's just a group of individuals that are taking the reins and saying, here's our personal problems and the problems we're hearing, and we're going to try to help everybody. And I don't know if anybody from outside of Coffee Park or outside of the situation that we're in would be able to properly address it. And it wouldn't be for a lack of effort. It would just be a lack of knowledge, that in-depth knowledge of what's going on with individuals from a housing to a rebuilding to a financial to an emotional standpoint.
In terms of the windmills that have to be tilted at a number of things, obviously things seem to be popping up, like that traffic wall. Was it along Hopper somewhere that everyone suddenly discovered they've got to pay for a new one?
Yeah, so you know, it's all been moving so fast in terms of debris removal, and it's no fault to any one individual or any one entity. So the city can only do so much in a certain amount of time. They have to they have a responsibility to their jobs, themselves, and their city as a whole to vet every aspect and of the rebuild, and it takes time. And unfortunately, what ended up happening was the opt-in portion of the debris removal happened before it was determined and communicated to the residents on Hopper Avenue that these, what we did think were sound walls are actually just considered fences because they sit on the individual homeowner's property and they're not tall enough to be considered sound walls, which would fall under the city's purview, but they're just considered fences. So if there's any damage to them, it's now the result, it's now the responsibility of those homeowners.
Wow.
Well, you have 19 on each side for a total of 38. And so this is something that happened after the fact. And now it's a thing where we've got to come together, find all 38 of these individuals, or at least 19 on one side and 19 on the other, to work together.
Wow.
And hopefully find some sort of common ground and move forward, because if it is considered a fence, there's no design or requirements by the city for whatever's put back. You could have it be open. You could have it be chain link. You could have it be a wooden board and batten kind of fence. And that goes from lot to lot. So it could be a mismatch situation, a smorgasbord, if you will, of types of fences they get put up.
All the way along, yes. These things just jump out, don't they, literally, and bring a whole new twist to the puzzle.
No, I was just going to say that, yeah, and it's constant, you know. Like I was saying before, we're a case study for all of this stuff, and the city doesn't know what the city doesn't know, and the residents don't know what they don't know, and by the time things are found out, it's, you know, sometimes it's far enough down the line where it gets frustrating and it gets emotional, and all of this is emotional, but it's more emotional than is typical, and it's unfortunate, but, I mean, you can only do so much, and the city can only do so much in the time they have, because they've got so many things to consider with a rebuilding, streets, infrastructure, setbacks for houses, all of these things, that sometimes things get put on their list, and they're ranked lower in importance than others.
Right.
And by the time they get to them, it's, oh, this is the determination, and it's, any sort of delay or any sort of extra money is a very, very touchy issue with the residents, because they want to maximize their insurance payouts. So, you know, it becomes a hot topic, and it becomes a very emotional issue, no matter what it is.
Exactly. Well, I don't envy you in the middle of that, Jeff. Yeah. That is tough, but thank you for doing that. I'm sure it's really helping a lot of people. We're speaking with Jeff Okrepke, a Rebuild Coffee Park. Obviously, everyone, was it October 9th the fire started and became the most expensive fire in California history, and part of a lot of Coffee Park in Santa Rosa was burnt to the ground, and Jeff is trying to reverse that. Some of the things we're hearing in some of the other areas, like Fountain Grove, where slightly newer area where they're having toxicity problems because of pipes melting underground, you know, because they use plastic, more modern plastics. Now, Coffee Park, was that more traditional underground utilities? Did that get any effect in there?
Yeah, so the city has told us that preliminary inspection has determined that everything is functional. So that means, for the time being, everything for the utilities can be used. Now, upon further inspection, of course, there could be determination that the integrity of these infrastructure, whether it be sewer, water, or whatever, could be compromised for long-term use and need to be replaced. But as of right now, for short-term use, everything is okay. So we have to, move along with that understanding and that expectation that everything will be fine. And yeah, we were more traditional just because we were built before Fountain Grove. Coffee Park started, the greater Coffee Park subdivision was started in the late 70s and carried into the early 90s. Some of the houses upon Coffee Lane they're as old as 1923, but they're, old houses and old lots that are still a part of it. So we had, like you said, the more traditional infrastructure that was in place.
Right, which was fortunate in a way, yeah.
Yeah.
You never know. And, well, there's been a lot of talk about sort of gaps in basically the debris removal. I know in some areas, like stem walls aren't being taken and some footings aren't going. There seems to be quite a variation in that theme. Is that you finding that in Coffee Park?
Yes, absolutely. The unfortunate aspect of this is you know, it's good intentions, right?
Mm.
And there's the old saying about good intentions and that the path to hell is paved with them.
Yep.
Came out with a program. The city and county urged everybody to opt into it. But it's the lack of consistency within the FEMA program. So the FEMA program wasn't bad. It was just the consistency with which it was executed.
Hmm.
So you have an instance where you had two initial prime contractors in Ashburn and ECC, and then one hit their limit, and in the renegotiation process, that contract was then given to Ashbritt.
Hmm.
And then when Ashbritt's contract came up, it was given back to ECC.
Huh.
And during that timeline, there were different instructions. So, for example, my lot, we had everything taken out, all the foundation, the driveway, everything.
Hmm.
But from what we've heard, people later on in the process, in the third contract, portion of it, were told that driveways were not a part of this,
hmm.
and that they weren't going to go and do some in-depth cleaning of the debris. And so it was just a lack of consistency, and it's because the contractors turned over a couple of times.
Right.
And it's unfortunate, but it seems like there are avenues in which they can take to help get some of that money from FEMA, or at least have some of their debris removal insurance money not be allocated towards the remaining removal and not be affected by the FEMA removal fees. Mm-hmm. So it seems like there is a way to solve this issue. But, obviously it would have been nice if it was done right the first time, but as long as it gets resolved and doesn't affect people's financial situation,
right,
hopefully it'll be okay.
Oh, good. Yeah. And now, obviously, apart from buildings, I know things like cars were left behind, and also the condition of the trees, the old trees there. What's happening on those two items?
So the cars are just, it's a time issue. So FEMA comes through. The engineers that do the cleaning aren't licensed to remove the cars. So you need someone like a car wrecker or a tow company to come and get those. So The first day that it's like, okay, you can clean, have your lot cleaned, and whatever contractor shows up with an excavator and some, you know, bulldozers or whatever equipment is used, they come through and clean that, and then they contact the tow companies or car wreckers and say, hey, there's two cars on this lot, and then those guys show up and remove it later. It's just a time delay thing. But the trees are something that from the beginning it was communicated with, they will not remove trees unless they're within the ash footprint, which basically means they're in the way of the equipment. So the equipment has to remove them in order to get to the rest of the debris.
Oh.
The problem is, I mean, if anybody who lives in Sonoma County, if anybody listening to this lives in Sonoma County and knows that, I mean, there's trees everywhere on pretty much every property because that's right. the kind of community we live in, right?
Right.
And, you're responsible now for removing those. You can use your debris removal insurance sublimit to do that, but you've got to go and find an arborist. Technically, you've got to go and find an arborist, go to the city, pull a permit, which the city is graciously now saying will be free and be just kind of a blanket permit where it says all you have to do is just say we're removing this tree and it's going to be automatically approved. And then it'll be fine.
Hmm.
That doesn't preclude anybody from going cowboy and having what we jokingly refer to as chainsaw Sundays, where they just go out and cut down the trees themselves. Because if we're being honest, no one's really going to stop that.
Right.
You know, it's private property. It's in the burn area, and these individuals and residents have been through enough that I don't think anybody's going to come out and red tag them or fine them for taking down a tree, a burnt tree improperly.
Right.
But the one thing that is now the next step and what we have to do is the landscaping that's between the sidewalk and the street. So, like for instance, on Hopper Ave, where those walls are that you spoke of before, there's trees and landscaping and kind of planters boxes right there. Well, the homeowners are responsible for those. That's a city ordinance, and there's been, you know, votes at the city level and ordinances passed and whatever other legal and political movements that say that is your responsibility. And that goes for everybody within the burn area. So they've got to go and remove those. And then at some point you've got to replant whatever is there, or else it's just going to be a dirt box, which is going to be pretty ugly to the person driving by. Once everything's rebuilt, there's just going to be a bunch of dirt sitting there, you know, carrying forward a bleak look, and then, you know, developing weeds or what have you.
Right. And then that really gets to the point of rebuilding. Now, people are taking different methods. They're doing it individually, you know, getting architects and contractors and just getting back that way. But then we had these other groups, developers who came in, like, we'll talk about De Novo, of course, where they were going to do hundreds of buildings. And can you tell us about those processes, and then, I suppose, work into the problems De Novo had in trying to make this work for themselves?
It's complicated. Initially you look at a scenario where you need to rebuild a 1,300 homes, and the intuitive thing would be to find a large developer like a KB Homes who does that for their business model. That's what they do, is build that many homes in a short period of time. But it's not that simple, because those kind of builders go out and they purchase, you know, 20 acres and build, you know, 60 to 80 homes on those and then sell them. Mm-hmm. They don't deal with homeowners. They don't deal with insurance payouts. Mm-hmm. And so, so that was an option that was off the table. So now you get into the individual homeowner, and it gets very complicated in terms of and what that homeowner wants their house to be. Two, what their financial situation is, and three, what their emotional situation is. Mm-hmm. There's a number of homeowners that are just saying, I can't deal with this emotionally. I don't want to put my family through this. We'll just buy a house somewhere else and move, and then sell our lot, and we're gone.
Right.
There's a considerable amount of people that are still trying to determine what they can and cannot do, if they even can rebuild, because they haven't got their insurance settlement yet. And they argue on a regular basis with their insurance companies to find out what their future is going to be.
Right.
And then you have the people that, the individual aspect of it, of, all right, so you have a settlement, and what do you want to do? Do you have enough to go and hire somebody to draft plans and do the engineering and build a custom home to be exactly what you want it to be? Or do you have just enough to use one of these larger builders that have pre-designed homes, and you kind of settle on one that you're comfortable with and you think you like it, and pick out your finishes and elevations and all that, and go with that.
Right.
That was, De Novo was a builder that came in and thought they could do a considerable amount of work in Coffee Park, and was taking, they were doing what are called design charrettes, where certain people with certain size homes got together and give their input to what they would like to have their home placed as. So you'd say, you know, before I had a 2-bedroom, 3-bath, it was obviously shaped this way, I had like a more open feel, a bay window, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And so they were in the designing phase, and while they were doing that, they were going out subcontractors to price it out. Well, the problem was, is that the subcontractors they had great relationships with were in Fairfield, Brentwood, Vacaville, San Jose. And there's enough building going on there that they couldn't entice them to come up to Santa Rosa at a reasonable rate. And it became too expensive and too cost prohibitive to continue on this effort, because they wouldn't be able to build as many homes for what they thought they were going to build. And they were just, they were getting priced out of the market, so to speak. You know, I do, as unfortunate as it is, and as the large emotional toll it took on people is very sad, but I do give them a little bit of credit, because they did it before they started taking down payments, before they started getting into contracts, and they just said, hey, we're sorry, we can't do this. And they were broken up. I talked to them personally, and they were broken up by it. They felt terrible, and they backed out. But they did it to the point where it wasn't, you know, past the Rubicon, so to speak. They weren't already building homes and found out, oh, we can't get enough electricians or tile guys or whatever, and just come up and do it. But that is a great concern, is the labor. And, you know, whether you're tile or roofers or electricians, there's jobs out there pretty much year-round for even remodels or refurbishing, whatever it is.
Right.
And the only subcontractors that are reliant on new construction are framers. Mm. And this has become kind of the example of, or the bellwether of the issues that we're going to be facing is framers. And in Sonoma County, when you're looking at, 1% vacancy rate and about 300 new homes a year, there's not a lot of work for framers. There were a lot local.
Right.
But there's other areas of California where there's plenty of framers, but there's so much work being done in those areas that they don't need to come here to work. So it's trying to find a way to get those builders here, or those framers here, and other subcontractors up here, so that they'll work in Santa Rosa. And now the cost of living up here doesn't help. It's not like they can rent a house really easily or really cheaply. And it becomes problematic on various levels. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out in terms of the labor and access to labor.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing that I talked a bit about it with somebody else in the construction industry a month or two ago, and he was saying kind of watch out, and also there's a group here called RVs Without Borders, you know, who are trying to find RVs so can literally framers can come and have somewhere to live, so they will come here and work. People are trying to figure out all different ways to make it work. But it could be really problematic.
Yeah, and you're touching on the second aspect of it. So let's say you have, all these builders are able to find subcontractors to come up here and build. Where are they going to live? You know, the city and the tourism bureaus, don't want them to be in the hotels because the TOT tax is only good if you stay there for 30 days or less. So if they're staying here for more than 30 days, they don't get the transient occupancy tax, which is the lifeblood of the tourism community, which is really big in this area.
Right.
And so you've got to find somewhere else to put them. And now you're begging people that have acreage to say, hey, can we put, whether it's like the Amazon shipping container homes or tiny homes or even tents if it has to come to that. And it is a very complicated and very daunting obstacle that's going to have to be overcome.
Well, yeah, and I don't think local authorities really can do that, certainly not in a short time, it appears. That doesn't seem to be one of their areas of their expertise to make places to materialize to live.
Yeah, and it's nobody's real expertise. I mean, the only time that I can think of in recent memory is the worker camps that in the North Dakota oil boom. They had those, and they were able to find land where these guys could camp out and work, and they were able to find places to house them. But then that brings a whole nother, and I'm trying not to be like the negative Nancy kind of person, but you have this situation where, let's say, even if you find housing, well, now you have another 2,500 to 3,000 people up here working, and that brings a whole public safety issue, whether it be drugs, prostitution, or just infrastructure, another 2,000 people driving up and down 101 to and from work. What's that going to look like? I mean, infrastructure's already been impacted severely with people being displaced and having to commute in that lived here, and now you're adding the people that are rebuilding those houses doing the same thing, and it's going to be a madhouse on the road.
I think so. Just every factor seems to build into it. But you're right. Yeah, for so, we were the area was building so many houses before the big crash, before 2007, and, you know, then it basically died, didn't it? Home building was basically non-existent for 10 years, so for these last 10 years. So I suppose we're paying for that now.
Yeah, and a large emphasis has been put on multifamily housing and low-income housing and apartments, and that's been a severe, a heavy focus by policymakers, and it's because, you know, there is a homeless problem, there's an affordable, and not just like low-income affordable, but just blatantly affordable, like just a reasonable rate affordable housing issue. And, you know, building 2,500 square foot homes is not going to solve that issue. So that was not a priority.
Right.
They were focusing on our homes and duplexes and apartments at that time. And now it's like, oh, well, now we've got to go back to building 5,000 homes in Sonoma County like it was in the mid to late 80s, where it was just, you know, churning out home after home after home after home.
Right.
And it's the contractors and every other industry around those having to ramp up to be able to do that. And it's been a long, long time since that kind of a boom.
Exactly. We're just not used to it. Yeah. Now, you bring something else up in terms of apartments and things like that. Now, are there any plans to, say, change any of the residential lots into more high-density usage?
That is first, those have to be rezoned, which is a vote and a political thing, and that is just a political minefield to do that. It's basically one of those things where this is my land. I determine what I want to do, you know, don't rezone. You know, I had a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house that I was growing my kids up in, and we had great schools and wide streets, and I don't want apartments. I don't want a Safeway or whatever grocery store here. You know, we want it back the way we were.
Right.
And it's really up to the residents to determine what they want, and most residents just want, what they had back. And rezoning it and putting in high density or anything like that, I think would be met with a very, very loud and contentious a voice among the community that was Coffee Park specifically.
Right. I can understand that. We're speaking with Jeff Otkrepke of Rebuild Coffee Park, of course, area of Santa Rosa that was destroyed in the fires. And now, you mentioned a lot of people are just selling their lots. They're not, they just say, okay, I'm not going to deal with it. How many, do you know how many or what percentage of the lots are going to be just being sold without in that way?
You know, that's the $1 million question. That's something that everybody's trying to figure out. And it's hard to gauge just because there's so many facets to it. You have the immediate people that sell, right? The ones that were, I had a neighbor 2 doors down that was contemplating moving to Costa Rica for about 6 to 8 months, and the fire made the decision for her. She's like, all right, well, don't have a house anymore, so I was thinking about moving to Costa Rica, so now I'm gone. And then you have other people that were looking to downsize and looking, or, you know, moving to Palm Desert and living on a golf course in a condo because they were empty nesters, whatever. So those are the immediate ones. And then you have the other ones, which are very likely, which are the distant landlords. So 43% of Coffee Park were renters. And so you look at those, and it just doesn't, for a lot of them, it doesn't make financial sense to rebuild, to float that money and hope to make your money back with renters down the line. So you have, those are the ones that are kind of like, yeah, that's, we're pretty sure they aren't going to rebuild. And then you have the unknown. The unknowns are the emotional toll that it's going to take on some individuals, like we spoke about a little earlier, which was, can they handle it? Can they stand being away from their homes in a temporary place far from where they want to be and handle that? Or are they just going to cash out and go away? And then you have the other part of the unknowns, which is the financial situation. There's people that are still trying to figure out what their insurance settlement is and how they're going to be able to rebuild if they can rebuild, and they don't know yet if that's a possibility or not. And they may not know for, you know, a couple months. So you get to a situation where there's people that are hoping to rebuild, that are planning to rebuild, and once everything's all said and done and the dust is settled, they're not going to be able to, and they're going to have to sell their lots.
Wow. Ooh, how awful.
And then you get to the, and then you get to the scary scenario, which is the one aspect of homeowner's insurance is what we call ALE, or additional living expenses, which basically pays your rent for 2 years to live somewhere else while your house is being rebuilt. And if somebody doesn't get their act together and get everything in line to rebuild in those 2 years, they could come to a point where if they're, you know, 2 months out from their ALE running out, which means they would have to pay their rent and their mortgage at the same time, which is very, very cost prohibitive for an individual.
Yeah.
They're going to have to make a decision of, I don't have time to have a house built that I can move into, so am I going to dip into my savings and pay out all this money if they can to pay both of those, or are they going to sell their lot? And that's not going to be seen for another, you know, about 18 months.
Wow. So it's a rolling disaster, this, isn't it?
I know. I feel bad coming on your show and being, you know, Mr. Doom and Gloom, but it's, there's so many unknowns as to how this is going to play out. You know, there's no answers, and there's no way to predict how it's going to end up.
As you said, it's all new, so everyone's feeling their way through it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, well, let's look to the future, say. Now, obviously, we don't want it to happen again, a terrible fire. Are you, obviously, it seems there were mistakes made during the warning phase of this. Are you speaking with representatives of the emergency systems to see what where we're going with that for the future?
We've had brief conversations with city and county officials, and the answer we get is it's an acceptable one. It's not the, you know, it's not perfect. None of these answers are going to be perfect, but it's acceptable to us, which is we're focused on rebuilding. There will be an in-depth review of the response, and actions will be taken if necessary, which we understand that the resources can't be used to go so far in-depth on these things right now. Yes, there is frustration. There's a lot of facets to it. You know, we understand that, you know, the Atlas Peak fire broke out, and a lot of resources from SR Fire were sent towards Atlas Peak. Mm-hmm. And then when the Tubbs fire broke out and started moving back in, they were recalled and had to move up, come all the way back. And it spread so quick through Mark West, Wiki up into Fountain Grove that sheriff, police, and fire were all up in there trying to, you know, get whomever they can out and find everybody. And then it hopped the 101, you know.
Right.
There's no way you could have foreseen that. And it started moving into Coffee Park, and they just were starting to play catch-up.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, I saw, you know, when I was evacuating myself, I saw one fire truck, and I saw one sheriff at Coffee and Hopper and one sheriff at Barnes and River Road, and that's because all they could spare at the time. And
wow.
You understand that. The larger argument is going to take place, and the one that gets really heated, and we try not to get into with residents because it gets to be a very emotional, very heated issue, especially the ones that live close to people that perish, is the text alert that could have been sent out and that somebody chose not to do.
Right.
And I think that will be the larger topic of discussion for a lot of people, because that's a lot easier to do than have the emergency response company, Redcom, you know, direct assets to different areas, right?
Right.
You can just send out a mass text or a mass alert to people that's loud and obnoxious and warn them. That's the one that's going to end up being most contentious when that comes. And, you know, that could be 2-3 years down the line. We don't know when that's going to happen. But
wow.
Hopefully... I know the argument is that it would have gone out to areas that were not affected immediately and could have caused panic, but hopefully, there would be some sort of revision or recalculation as to how this can be done, where it can be much more focused on areas so that that decision doesn't have to be made again.
Exactly, exactly. We have to learn from this one. If we don't, more fool us, isn't it?
Yeah.
Over the next few months, then, it's really the same thing is happening, really, just more debris, more things moving forward then for Coffee Park.
Yeah, right now the heaviest focus is on insurance settlements and maximizing payouts so that individuals can have the most money possible to rebuild. That's where we as the Coffee Strong Neighborhood Association, as well as the individuals, are focused right now. Is just working with insurance companies to be able to get the most out of their claims that they can, so that we can get many people to stay and rebuild.
Right. Do the insurance company? It's a weird thing. So do they have a heart? How are they reacting to this?
See both sides. You see the side of, hey, you know, have a little compassion, go above and beyond, and do what you can. And then you see the other side of the for-profit company that has stockholders and investors, and they've got to do what's best by them. Because that's what their internal, corporate structure set. And they can get sued if they do something that is not in the best interest of their stockholders. So, it's a double-edged sword. You want them to be as compassionate and as outgoing as possible. And I think they're going to go a little above and beyond what they normally do. I think we've started to see that. Most insurance companies have said, with additional living expenses, that they understand it's a disaster area and that rebuilding within 2 years may not be feasible. And so I think you're going to see a lot of them say, yes, we'll give you extensions beyond. They're not obligated to, but I think you will see that. But at the same time, that's the key word is obligation. Is what are they obligated to do? So they can say they do that. They will do that, but they're not obligated to. So they can back out at any time. But I think most of them understand it's the they don't want to be tried in the press, so to speak.
Right.
They don't want to be the one insurance company that gets blasted out there that they're really. Messing with fire victims and natural disaster victims, and that they're evil because that'll, then you get into the cost benefit analysis. I kind of liken it to a car recall, right? Where you see, what's it going to cost versus us getting sued versus what's it going to cost to recall all these cars with these defective parts. So they kind of make that balance, what's it going to cost if we pay out all this stuff versus what's it going to cost us to get sued, as well as damage to our reputation and anybody else across the nation that's going to, if Allstate's if you're not in good hands with Allstate anymore, then it's going to be, it's going to hurt them as well. So they've got to play that fine line of compassion versus what is prudent to do for their investors and stockholders.
Right. No, that's good to hear that there is, they're not being too rigid, yeah. Is there anything coming up, any meetings coming up that people should know about?
No, we had a meeting last night for the Coffee Park area. If you lived in Coffee Park and you haven't visited it yet, there's our website is coffeestrong.com. There's an events tab on there that you can click and see a calendar of events, whether it's legal aid or United Policyholders or the Green Building Expo, and just a ton of information that we've gathered and aggregated for people just to review, from builders to blog articles on the most seemingly mundane and boring things, but is important to people, like slab foundation versus grade beam and pier foundation. There's an analysis of that on there. That even if you're not in the Coffee Park area, feel free to visit that and see kind of what's going on. And one thing, if you don't mind me pitching this, we have partnered with the United Way. The United Way has offered to be our proxy 501c3. for our association. And if you want to make a tax-deductible donation to help with our efforts to help with the rebuilding of Coffee Park and the informational distribution of information, you can give to the United Way of the Wine Country and just on the memo say it's earmarked for Coffee Strong. And, you know, that would help us with, you know, paying for, you know, there's a GIS program that we use, a CRM. We use all the software that we're using to help keep people in touch and track things. And so if you feel so inclined, that would be very, very nice. We would be much appreciated.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for this update. Jeff Opkrepke of Rebuild Coffee Park, Coffee Strong. And, well, we'll keep checking in and see what's happening. And hopefully, you know, there's a few more glimmers of light get a bit bigger along this way very soon.
Yeah, and thank you for having me on. And I appreciate you checking back in for an update. And it does mean a lot to myself as well as our board and our association to have you keep checking in, keeping us in the spotlight so people don't forget about us.
Exactly. Very, very important. We can't. That's too important. Well, thank you very much, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Set in the sky, flowers never die, babe. Friends don't pass you by
for that moment.